All right, so here we are, last session. It's nice seeing Steven stuff working. He was having fun with the service bus all week, so it was nice to see that come through. I'm going to miss this Britney Spears headset the rest of the week. That's going to be I'm going to be wearing this around Stockholm tomorrow. It's going to be great. Start talking to myself, freak people out. All right, so we'll be talking about complex event processing here in this last session. Who's familiar with this term from a more formal standpoint? A few people? Okay, it's got a very distinct meaning in the IT space, and some people are actually pretty religious about it, so hopefully I do it justice. Last time you have to see this slide. I think we're going to send this to the whole team tonight just for the fun of it. If you haven't noticed, somehow Michael's been staring at this the entire week, this is the code. You know, this. And I just tried a little while ago and it did work, so I'm going to call user error on that one. Maybe it was you. You had a friend who couldn't use it? Does your friend have a drinking problem? Let's be honest. All right, so it's the last time you need to look at this, I promise. So we'll be talking about the chapter 13 in the book, Complex Event Processing. So Watson Media, so I get to name something after my dog, is a set of website properties. So it's one of these companies that actually has multiple websites. In this case, they're selling different apparel and gear and things like that, and they're scaling up quickly. And as they're scaling up, they're realizing that their hardware isn't scaling with them. So they're noticing some timeouts here and there. They're noticing lousier user performance as they try to ramp up quickly. So because they're a fairly new company, they are concerned with customer loyalty and brand loyalty. So they're trying to figure out ways to, how do I engage customers who've just left the site or might be leaving the site because of they've been experienced performance problems? So one thing they're looking to do is to, how can I do real-time analytics? How can I be really looking at my data in real time, making actual decisions on that, and doing something about it? So from a requirements perspective, what we put in this use case was that we have to analyze these user actions in real time, connect to multiple sources, because we want to be able to say, you know, let's say there's more than four timeouts experienced in any 60-second window, then anybody who left the site in that 60-second window should get a coupon to say, come back, please, we'll give you 15% off. So the key part is that as you're trying to make sure you're finding out in these small windows of time what's happening and then acting upon it. So one key to this, you know, a fact that maybe isn't a requirement, but this isn't a transactional system. So I'm not putting orders through this. Reliability isn't the same concern as speed. Speed is more important than reliability here. So what this solution calls for is complex event processing. So event-driven architecture, is that familiar to some folks as a concept? Now, if you've been doing BizTalk, you've probably actually been doing event-driven architecture since the beginning. BizTalk's very event-driven. And so, I'll explain a little bit about that pattern, but a lot of this is about continuous processing. You know, or continuous intelligence is actually the term used in the complex event processing space. But EDA, or event-driven architecture, is an architectural style where one of the more components in the software system is event-driven and loosely coupled. So what does it mean to be event-driven? There's around five criteria you'll see that means something you're building is an event-driven architecture. So first, does it report current events? So does your upstream system tell you things as it happens? So not that, you know, it tells you once a night and things like that. To be event-driven, as things are occurring, that's being sent out. The second piece of that, which relates to it, is that the source pushes information. Because clearly the person who's initiating the event knows much more about it than the person who's polling it. You know, Steven in his previous demo mentioned the inefficiency of polling. Whenever we build things with these, you know, BizTalk SQL polling adapter, inherently it's inefficient because you're asking it every 10 seconds for data. What if 9 times out of 10 there's no data? I've just wasted these cycles. So in a true event-driven architecture, first off, you're reporting things as they happen, and secondarily, you're pushing them out. Thirdly, is everybody who's listening on those events responds immediately. So in a true event-driven architecture, you're not queuing things up and acting on them once a month. The key is you're getting these things and you're acting on them immediately because they're important pieces of data. The fourth criteria is that they're one way. They're fire and forget. So in a true event-driven architecture, the publisher doesn't really care about what all the subscribers are doing with their data. They're firing it off. You can do whatever you'd like with it. I'm not telling you what to do with it. Which leads into the fifth criteria, which is that in a typical EDA, the events are free of commands. So I don't send an event out called insert customer. That's implying what you need to do with it. I send out an event called new customer or updated customer. So it's a subtle difference, but the key is that the publisher isn't telling you what you should do with data. It's not a command-driven system. It's a data-driven or small event-driven paradigm there. Now, where this comes into play, and as we've seen here, you know, in the scenario we just talked about, I might have click events on a website that, you know, we all visit websites and we do different actions and we might restore, you know, store that click stream. That's one set of events. And I've got another set of events that are on my server logs that are maybe telling me timeouts, maybe they're telling me other things happening. So I've got these distinct data sets. So when you've got this scenario where these single events might not do much, but you actually need this composite, that's what complex event processing really is, which is taking multiple different business events and distilling common knowledge out of that and coming up with new events out of these other sources. So which is, I guess, ironic that the term is complex event processing, and maybe the word complex is off-putting, like, oh, it's really complicated. The idea is it's meant to be the opposite, is that you're actually putting together summary events, which are much easier to understand than all these individual point events and trying to figure out all these reams of data, what's actually happening. Instead, I'm getting these nice summary events that are saying, this is happening over time, or we've noticed this trend. There's a lot of pattern matching there. So we all do complex event processing every day. I mean, if a server goes down or if something goes wrong, you're manually aggregating information from multiple sources, trying to correlate it based on time. You know, maybe I'm figuring out, was there a code change? Then did something happen to the server? Then something happened here that resulted in my site being down. And often this is time-based. It is temporal. You're not looking at something that happened 3 months ago. You're trying to frame things in a certain time window. So that's one of the big aspects of all this, is you're doing this time-based event analysis. So the way, you know, the one thing that's so different about complex event processing than, or an event-driven architecture than doing simple data-driven apps is that, unlike a data-driven app where the data is fairly static and the queries are always changing, right? Your app is just executing queries against the data. In a complex event processing scenario, the queries are the static thing, and the data is actually what's changing and going over these static queries. So in an app like this, you write a query and you deploy your single query, and all the data just flows over it in that model. So it's a little different than these traditional data-driven apps. So in the scenario, you could use both BizTalk or Stream Insight as viable candidate architectures for this. BizTalk can kind of pull this off, and in a lot of cases, BizTalk is an event processing engine. You're sending in data events from all different sources, and your event cloud, if you will, all of the events in your system are sitting in BizTalk. So BizTalk's a great event source, and in some cases, it can actually be the processing engine as well. Stream Insight, which, who's heard of Stream Insight? Excellent. Nice virgin audience. That's good. Stream Insight is a new component of BizTalk Server 2008 R2, which has absolutely nothing to do with SQL Server 2008 R2, but much like many Microsoft technologies, this was the best home for it. So much like the Business Rules Engine has nothing to do with BizTalk except some loose integration, this was another interesting technology that found its home in a particular parent product. So the key is I can install Stream Insight as a set of DLLs in my project, and the only thing it requires is a SQL license, but there's no SQL component to it. So, I mean, could BizTalk do this? Yes, BizTalk could easily handle the messaging component of this. Even with high volume, as Ewan will be quick to remind anyone now, anyone who complains about BizTalk performance hasn't sat in his lab, which has his 28,000 cores and 68 servers and no room for a bed, which I think he fits this in his house. So, you know, latency and performance isn't usually that big of a problem anymore with BizTalk if you do size up. Now, clearly, you still have latency problems, but at some point. But for the most part, you can send some significant load through BizTalk and process it just fine. The tricky part is the windowing, which is if you had to write in BizTalk, and I put this in my first book, and that's where you first started giving me grief on this concept, is I put this in my first book last year showing that I could do this in an orchestration, and I could build an orchestration that had a timer that would expire and collect things and things like that. It was a little bit hodgepodgey, but I liked the concept and it worked pretty neat. Ewan came to me and said, well, how come you just couldn't do BAM with this? Or why are you trying to tie this together in orchestration? Because for most Microsoft people, I'll say Microsoft-oriented people, complex event processing isn't something we've been doing much of. This has been in core financial services apps. Microsoft's never had a product that really does this. They've never talked about it. So this is a fairly new concept if you're in the Microsoft space. So Ewan's objections were noted and ignored, and decided to write an entirely new book where we could actually discuss this further. So, you know, as we look at windowing, this was the one aspect in the BizTalk world where I had to kind of piece this together, but it's still a little tricky to pull off. So the one place where BizTalk would excel in this case is the adapter set, because if I do have to pull data from multiple sources, once again, I've got that out of the box versus the Stream Insight model where I have to build all my adapters. So Stream Insight is definitely a functional match. Now, the key is that because it's a version 1, as we've talked about a bit, version 1 products at Microsoft typically have great framework, not a lot of tooling, and this is no exception to that. But the key is Stream Insight has this, it's an in-memory processing engine, which can do up to 100,000 messages per second in terms of processing. So the volume it can stream over and do event aggregation on is pretty extensive. Very loosely coupled, but I do have to build these adapters. There's no adapters out of the box with Stream Insight. And the management, as we'll look at, there is barely a management function. I had to finally write a tool myself just to do certain operations that I threw online. So management's pretty raw, and until the next version, you're not going to see a big change in that. So as has been the trend for the last 2 days, I've chosen something besides BizTalk, which is perfectly fitting for a BizTalk release party. So what I've chosen here is Stream Insight, and mainly because on the BizTalk side, the windowing concerned me a little bit, is how do I do things in these time-based windows that say every minute drop the results from the last minute and only include this minute? You're going to get zombies in an orchestration world where you've got messages coming in and the orchestration's in the middle of shutting down, and it would be just a little bit clumsy. Not to mention, because you have the message box, you'd be sending in a lot of unnecessary events and straining your engine. So if we think about this, their problem, this customer's problem, is that they're listening for abandoned shopping carts on an e-commerce site. That's probably a very small number of the click events on the site. So in the BizTalk world, I might be sending in 5,000-10,000 messages per minute, of which I care about 3 of them. So now I've really overloaded my system to do pattern matching on a very small subset of events. So again, that would be at least a concern of mine, that I'd be overloading the bus. On the Stream Insight side, again, fairly lightweight. I can embed this in my own app. I can use a hosted model. I can handle the load. It's built to be handling some of this advanced pattern matching and windowing, as we'll look at. Of course, the risk with Stream Insight is that it is fairly new. There's roughly 8 blog posts, period, about the product. So it's something that you're not going to get a lot of community expertise on at the moment. So you're going to use documentation, discussion lists, and members of the CAT team who actually answer email. Ewan is one of them. So Stream Insight as an architecture uses an event-based model where you have event adapters that either push or pull from source systems. These events, and the key piece, if you can see dark on dark, is standing queries. And the idea is these are standing queries that I deploy to the engine, and then I walk away. And these are queries that all the data constantly runs over. And when that query meets something that it's interested in, it calls an output adapter to then emit that complex event or single event back out. So in some cases, again, my output could be a dashboard. I could have some real-time monitoring dashboard in a call center that's telling me the average call volumes by product, by type, as they're occurring. It could be a mobile device. It could be also a database for a warehouse. So the key is this doesn't replace a traditional BI, but this is really a complementary solution to a BI solution where I'm doing this continuous intelligence as opposed to the batch processing. And then, of course, to do some sort of random plug for SQL Server, because it's part of the product, I could look up reference data in SQL Server or anywhere. Or the cache, which at some point, hopefully we'll be writing a white paper on that. I'm trying to throw some topics at the team to see if we'll be writing some white papers, and this is one of the ones I'd love to work on, which is how do I use AppFabric Cache as a reference store, because you're talking about significantly high volume data streams, and the performance hit of going to the database every time might be high. So using something like AppFabric Cache works perfectly in this environment. So these event processing agents, which is really where this plays in a traditional complex event processing space, are going to do lots of stuff. I might get in, obviously millions of events here, and that's some of the examples the team will use when they talk about this, is you might have devices that are literally emitting millions of events per second, whether these be hardware devices and so forth. So the first thing an event processing agent might do is filter it down. So I could deploy Stream Insight here, which filters out all the only things I don't want. I could have Stream Insight also deployed here, which takes those filtered events. So that's one of those things that an EPA or event processing agent might do. I might enrich the events. You know, I might take an event and look up more reference data. I might reorder them, because when you're talking this sort of volume, they might come out of sync just a little bit, and I might want to reorder them on the way back. I can correlate them, which is what we're going to be doing today, where I'm taking events that came in from one stream and tying them to events that came in on another stream. What else am I might be doing? And then I might be doing some aggregations, because really the value here is if I'm saying, what's the average over a particular time, or what's the min, or what's the max? So I'm able to do some calculations on all the events flowing through the bus. Now, events themselves can be three types. I can have a point-in-time event. So let's say a server goes down. That's just an event. Something just happened. There's no duration to it. It's just a single point event. I can also have an interval event, which has a start and an end date. So this could be an interval event for, you know, you clocking in and out of work, for example. At the end of the day, there's an event that shows when you clocked in and out. It has a time duration. And then finally, you have an event type that doesn't have a known duration. So the first event comes in with a start time, and then the follow-up comes later. So if we think about, let's say, a long-haul trucker who's driving across Sweden, they log in at the beginning and say, I'm on the road, and they go ahead and post their event. They don't close that event until they're done. So I might have these type of events with these unknown durations. What's also nice is because you can check for the absence of data, you can do a lot of things. Again, you can write some intelligent queries. So if this trucker logged in 8 hours ago and he hasn't clocked out yet, you can actually run queries that look for missing data. Because in essence, in complex event processing and event processing, the absence of data is often data. If you think about it, if you don't get a call right now telling you that your family has, I don't know, all gotten kidnapped, that's probably good information they haven't been. Or maybe you just haven't gotten the call yet. That's a terrible analogy. So the absence of data, it's been 2 days. The absence of data could still be data. So windows. Windows are a really key part, as I've alluded to complex event processing. The first type of window, and again, these are interesting concepts for someone who's used to doing BizTalk stuff like myself or people who aren't familiar with this space, is in the idea of a tumbling window, you've got a block of time that resets itself every interval. So as those events on the top are occurring, they're falling into distinct windows that are getting reset. So let's say this is 10 seconds or 10 days. As these events are occurring, this window is getting blown away and reset. And I might do averages on this window. I might do counts or aggregations or min-max. But the key is in the tumbling window, I'm resetting my window each time. And that's one of your easy, more popular window types. The one thing you don't get here, though, is if you're looking for a trend, and let's say five things happen here and two things happen here, all of a sudden I missed that. Because now if I'm looking for when is there seven things that have happened in the last 90 seconds, I lose it because these things happened at the end of one window and these happened at the beginning. So I fix that using the topic, the means of a hopping window. In a hopping window, you say, what's your window size? So let's say it's 90 seconds. And then you specify your hop. So what you say is, let's say your hop is 5 seconds. So every 5 seconds, I recalculate the last 90 seconds, if you think. So you're hopping along in time by a particular hop. So in this case, I'm saying that, hop again, and I'm actually overlapping some of the events, but now I'm actually getting a real look at what's happening over a specific duration. So it's a much more powerful window where I can see trends happening before I would have really thought about it. So there's a lot of practical applications for this stuff when you start thinking about it, of how you might do some interesting detection of what's happening in your environment before you even really thought about it. I can tell things that are pending or do some interesting pattern matching here. So it's also much more lively. I'm finding out things faster. The nice thing is that when I write queries in Stream Insight, they're written using Link. So who uses Link? Many people? Few? So it's nice that these are extensions to Link, and you write your queries using Link and deploy them, and it's fairly natural. So let's look at a few of these. And in essence, this is where your company's intellectual property is. I mean, the queries you write that try to do fancy pattern matching and fancy intelligence, that's where the real brain power comes in. So I can do what would be called projection. So I can do a from the input stream of data, select, create a new object out of it, grabbing the ID, and I could do some calculations. I might divide it by 10. So I'm allowed to manipulate data to create new events out of existing ones. I can do filtering. So I could take that information, but only where this particular ID is greater than 3, for example. So I can do that, as well as, of course, combine these things. So I'm still dividing by 10. I can do correlation. So this is where we get into some crazy stuff, is I can take this stream of data, I can take maybe this seemingly unrelated other stream and join them on something. This might even be something fairly loose that I decide to do just because I'm looking for trends between disparate streams. I don't know necessarily if I'm going to find what I want, but this is an interesting way where I could join disconnected data streams very easily and then create a new event out of the aggregate. And then actually do aggregates. So as you see here, I've defined a window. So I can't do aggregates unless I have a window. I've defined a tumbling window that's 10 seconds long. And I've calculated the average number or the average amount within that window. So every 10 seconds, I'd be getting a different average of everything that happens in that window. And then, of course, I could group it. So this is where I could say, do all that stuff, but throw it into a group that's by product, by company, by whatever. And so now I'm emitting every 10 seconds an average by a certain thing. So, and this could be an event that then I drop into BizTalk for further processing, or an event that I send anywhere else. So as you think about the pieces of the Microsoft stack that could sit on each end, BizTalk could be the input stream, absolutely. BizTalk could be something I receive on the back end, or I send this to the cloud, or I throw it in the portal, or I email somebody. So you really think about what does this output event mean to you and figure out the best channel to send that through. So what we're going to build here, or what I built here, and we'll look at very quickly, is adapters that pull data from all the various websites that this company has, sends all the click events and all the server events, so all the click events you're on the website, as well as all the server logs, to an MSMQ server, because I don't want to have my website at all impacted by this. So they're just going to asynchronously dump messages to a queue, which then I'll be reading off via Stream Insight, which then sends stuff out and says, please come back, we'll give you a big discount. So you could have used a lot of technologies here. I did MSMQ, A, because I wanted to figure out how to do MSMQ, but B, because most of the examples you'll see from the Stream Insight team show, you know, sucking in an Excel file and running over a bunch of queries on it and then emitting output. It doesn't show like a real-time interaction. It's more like take a dump of information and query over it. I went to look at one way that you could process near real-time. Now, this could be a WCF service. Again, this could be a BizTalk bus. Just depends what you want to stick on this end over here. So the first thing I had to do was actually build the adapters. Like I said, there's no Stream Insight adapters out of the box. They provide some SDK sort of adapters, but they're not supported. They're not, you know, the official adapters. So I had to build some adapters to talk to MSMQ and send something in. So let's take a quick look at that. All right. So what I have in this solution is first defining my event types. Now, as you might be happy to see, all of this is fairly .NET based, so my event type is just a .NET object. There's nothing fancy about defining an event that I use in Stream Insight. In fact, I haven't decorated this with anything Stream Insight specific. This is just a regular .NET object. Yeah, I mean, I didn't have any references to Stream Insight. It doesn't matter. It's just, what is my payload is all I'm creating here. So then I need to actually build the adapter for MSMQ. And just to show I didn't completely fake anything here, I do have a couple of queues decorated for both the website actions, so all of the click events, and then another one for all the event log things that happen on the server. So the adapters themselves actually aren't that terrible to build. I mean, they're not the same in the BizTalk world where you can screw yourself up a lot with writing an adapter. Or maybe it's just me. is that the first thing you do is define some configuration objects. So what do you want to pass into the adapter at runtime? In my case, I wanted to pass in the queue name, what the actual data type of the object I'm passing in is, and then I'll list the fields that make up the object. So when you create a Stream Insight adapter, you have two choices. I can create untyped or typed. If I build a typed adapter, I don't need any of this sort of stuff because it's going to be typed to a very particular event payload. In my case, I want to have my MSMQ usable, my adapter usable by both sources. I want to pull the event log. I want to also pull the click events. So I want a single adapter to do anything with MSMQ. So in my case, I can reuse this over and over again on any project. And then building the adapter is actually fairly straightforward. The only thing I'll jump down to is the part where I listen in on the MSMQ event using the system.messaging namespace. And every time I get a new message from the queue, I type it so I can figure it out. But most importantly, what I want to jump down to is the enqueue message, which gets called by the Stream Insight engine. So I create the insert event type. You'll notice this is of type point event. So I'd mentioned the three types, a point event, an interval event, and the other one that doesn't have an end time, which I can't remember the name of. So in the point event type, he just has a single property for start date, start time, versus an interval event would have a start time and an end time. So all I do here is create that event by looping through all the different fields in the .NET type, setting its value. I see I set its start date. Now I set it to datetime.now. Actually, this wasn't that smart of me, because the one thing that's interesting in Stream Insight, which can be tricky, is that Stream Insight doesn't work on system time. So it works on application time. When you send events in, that's what increments the engine. It's not looking at the system clock and doing things based on that. It's looking at the clock of the data events. This was the strategic choice they took so that when you're doing replays, the neat thing is those link queries that I showed you, I can run them against historical data or the live data. So if I were doing historical data, system time doesn't matter. What I care about is the timestamps in my data source. This happened last week on a Tuesday at this time, and so forth. So when I'm doing these temporal time-based queries, the application time is what really matters, not necessarily the system clock, which is fairly arbitrary. So while I set this to datetime.now, ideally I would set this to a time that was in my event payload. Down here, then I simply make sure that my queue isn't too full, otherwise it sits here in a waiting state if there's too many events in Stream Insight to quiet down, and then simply enqueues them. So there's really not too much to building an adapter, whether it's the file adapter, MSMQ adapter, WCF adapter. It's fairly straightforward. And you have a factory object you need to implement, which picks which actual adapter to instantiate. Because I might choose to have a point adapter based on different types, so this more or less lets it figure out which is the right adapter to do. All right. So the most important part is actually writing the queries. And you have two choices for hosting the solution. You can host it in your custom app. So I could build a Windows service or a DOS application, which of course we all do for demos, and host it like that in memory. Or I can host it using a shared Windows service, which would be accessible for multiple machines and so forth. In my case, I've chosen to just host it in my own application. So to do that, you just have references to Microsoft.complex event processing and then Microsoft complex event processing adapters. So in this case, I create a new server. Otherwise, I'd be doing a connect if I were connecting to a standing server. And I can define a WCF endpoint so that I can connect to this from the Stream Insight debugger and do some management operations. I showed you on my input adapter that I had some configuration properties, so which MSMQ am I using, things like that. My output adapter has the same thing. So I'm specifying I want to write it to the console versus the file system versus anything else. I'm creating a new application on my server, and then I go ahead and actually instantiate my streams. So these streams, if I jump to where I actually wrote this thing, here's my queue on my server. And I go ahead and call this create operation, which then instantiates that adapter. And in my adapter, I start listening on the queue instantly. So as soon as I run this code, I start listening on the queue. And every time a queue message comes in, it gets populated into my complex event stream. And if we jump back up, we get to the fun stuff. So once I do that, then I can write some queries and start the query. So let's look at my very first query. In this case, I'm looking at the website click actions, and I'm saying from E in that click stream, simply select E. We'll start off basic. You know, we got to get our feet wet here. And we'll start with that. So let's take a look at what that looks like. So he's listening to the queue up there, and I've got my little application, which then will do website clicks. So if I just send 10 events in, those are instantly getting written out. So those are getting processed instantly by that standing query. My query has no filter on it, has no logic, so it's immediately emitting those back out. There's nothing special to those queries. Now let's make that a little more intelligent then. So let's at least put a where clause on there. And again, I get full IntelliSense of my event payload. So I only want the events that are of a type abandoned cart, right? I don't care about all the other noise in the system right now. What's cool is that within Stream Insight, I can have multiple listeners on the same adapter, so I could have a whole other set of queries that care about other events, not the abandoned cart. So I can chain together queries, I can reuse adapters. So once I get these events in, I can do all sorts of fun stuff. Again, fun being relative. So if I look at abandoned carts, I just sent 25 messages in, but nothing showed up here. If I specifically throw a couple out here that are abandoning the cart, those show up. So I'm filtering the data, again, in real time, as they're coming in, I'm processing them. So that's somewhat interesting. As I have that online, let me show you the debugger. And because I opened up a little management endpoint, I can take a look at my server and see those queries running, hopefully. Here's that sample events app I created. Here's my events. It's running. I can open that up, take a little bit of look. Now, I can also record, which is pretty neat. So he'll start recording everything I do. So if I send in a few more events, let's just send in 5 regular ones. And we'll send in 2 more that do abandon. I can come back here and stop recording. And it shows me all the different insert events. It shows me what the action was. And I got some key data from the payload. Now, of course, it also shows me as I filter down that I have a select down here because I'm only caring about the abandoned carts. The only ones that make it past the select criteria are these two. And I've got the final ones being sent back out. So I can also do some right-click propagation and say, okay, well, show me where this thing goes as I move down. And it points out this event. It tracks it through the system to tell me how it got to the end. So kind of a neat way to track my events as they're going in and out of the system. So this is the extent of your management interface in Stream Insight today. Good stuff. So clearly some work to still be doing on this. I can't do full management, but this at least gives me the ability to stop and start queries and do some things like that. So let's look back at the application. And let's get into the more things that our particular customer needs here. So this was the first query. The second one is where we start getting a little more fun, and I'm looking in a different stream for all the timeout events. So this is looking at the server logs, for example, and every time I see a timeout, group it by 60 seconds, create a new tumbling window that's that long, and show me, by grouping it, which website and how many things happened. So in this case, every minute I'd be getting an output of how many timeouts was I getting per website. But I can keep chaining these together. So I can take that query which was called log event query, I can write another one that says, well, I only care about these if there's more than four of them. Like, this alone isn't interesting because you could have gotten a random timeout for some bizarre reason. So this query says, well, only if you see more than four of these in 1 minute is this going to be of concern to me. And then finally, what I really care about is only take these, which are the more than four, take them from all the click events, and when the same website's occurring, spit out which customer this happened to, and then which website, and so forth. So what should be the output of this is every customer who tried to order while there were more than four abandoned events in a one-minute period. And I'm getting this real-time then spit out. Does that kind of make sense as that's happening? No, but at this point in the day, you're humoring me? That's cool. All right, so if we run this one, as we send events in, and we just start producing events, I might produce a few timeouts, might abandon some carts, I might do a few different things, and as things are processing, hopefully as the window progresses, that's the one tricky thing with windows, is nothing's getting emitted because that window is still open. So that's with the tumbling window where it can be tricky because until that window closes, I don't have visibility. But now the window's closed, I've incremented time, and as you can see, I've started to get emitted out where I have a customer ID, the event counts more than five, and I get some details here. So again, this would be really challenging to do in a BizTalk environment. You could try to do this in custom code, but could you really scale right? Could you do this sort of pattern matching and not get stuck in the semantics? So it's an interesting paradigm as you look at doing this sort of thing, is how do you take data, how do you do some complex matching across the data with high volumes and emit new intelligence on the fly? I mean, what are the operations at your company where you could benefit from knowing things real time? And you kind of start with that. So if you've got non-transactional, because that's not persistent, right? I could lose data or I might miss data in my queries. The key would be that Stream Insight engine, that's all in-memory data. So if I pulled the plug on my machine, I might lose data. So if you've got non-transactional, high-volume data, where you're maybe just doing observable data, could you take that and do some of these complex queries against it and learn some new things? So with that, that's Stream Insight questions on that. That was your first look. Yeah. Yeah, so questions around RFID and Stream Insight, and definitely that's one of those cases where they complement each other well. So it doesn't replace what the RFID offering has, the things that come in BizTalk. Really meant to complement that to some extent, that even the consolidation that might happen in that product can be fed into something like this to do more complex pattern matching and detection. You know, and that's where this scenario often comes in general, is taking device data, taking all this machine data, which would take way too long to sift through in a data warehouse or even manually, and getting some intelligence out of it. So complementary to the RFID stuff, not replacing it. Anything else? No? Neat stuff. I mean, it's going to be, there was an MSDN webcast back in, I think, May or June that showed how this played with BizTalk and how BizTalk could be an output of this or an input. And that was a pretty good webcast right there. So you'll see more and more about this as more people start playing with it. And yeah, hopefully you play with it yourself, given it's got a pretty low cost of entry. Thanks.